presenting a number of the same issues, and hopefully all of us brought back some good ideas on ideas we can bring here to our system. Anyone else have a report they want to make?
Yeah, several items I'd like to report on, Mr. Chair.
I assume that slots and showgirls were not on the agenda in Reno.
Not on my agenda. Others can have to speak for themselves.
This is just getting interesting. Okay.
In any event, on Thursday morning of last week, I went to Discovery Building and represented the commission along with Jeff Zients, Marion, on Best Workplaces for Commuters. It's an award that's given to organizations that have a superior track record in getting their or arranging for their employees to use transit to get to work. The Park and Planning Commission was one of the awards. And there's also an award every year to the organization that does the most region-wide to encourage that use of transit ridership, and the award for 2004 went to the Silver Spring Traffic Management District. So it reflects the very high transit usage we have in Silver Spring. The census shows that over 40% of residents immediately around in and around CBD use transit to get to work, and the ridership into the CBD area is about 37%. Also, on Saturday morning, I went to a tree planting ceremony to recognize the contribution that's been made to the commission and to the community by the late John Mathias. Very nice affair for about 45 minutes, a well-attended 20, 30 people, and I would say about evenly divided between those that knew John through his work on the Germantown Master Plan and those who were involved in the TPP, the Transportation Policy Report 2 planning effort, which John was heavily involved in, one of our best spokesmen, and close coordination between transportation, land use issues, and a strong advocate of transit. And here is just the award, Best Workplaces for Commuters. It was given to the agency. Marion just brought it down. This was last Thursday.
That's great.
On a Saturday afternoon, there was a less joyous occasion, but a very nice ceremony that Commissioner Perdue and I attended, the memorial services for Arden Elligan's daughter. Very pleasant, not pleasant, but a very moving event, and our regrets to the family. So those are the three things I have to report.
Thank you. Meredith?
Well, I would just say that I attended the Fed Committee meeting on the MPDU legislation last Friday, and I know since then there's been another session, but it mainly focused on the buyouts and how the buyout program would work, and then there were also some questions raised about the role of the planning board, both in buyouts and I guess there's been further developments, but
they're still working on it. We had a lengthy work session yesterday as well, but no votes have been taken yet.
No votes.
Any announcements, Wendy? Okay, well, now I have the very special announcement that I promised. I'd like to ask Acting Chief Nathaniel J. Barber to come to the front of the room and have a seat. Welcome.
Good morning.
We part of having a gold medal heart system is having a gold medal policing program. And any of us who are familiar with other jurisdictions and other parts of the countries that have public safety issues in their park system will understand that if you don't have a very high standard of public safety in your park system, immediately every other issue goes out the window. Trash cans, maintenance, playgrounds, nothing is more important than having a safe park system, because when the park system is not safe or perceived as safe, naturally what you find is that the public is reluctant to access it, and everything else you're trying to accomplish becomes almost irrelevant. We are absolutely blessed to have a very, very safe park system in Montgomery County, and a big part of the reason, obviously, is our well-trained and very professional park police force. We had a terrific chief who retired some time ago. We have had an extensive and lengthy search to find the new chief, and I'm very pleased today to announce that acting chief Nathaniel Barber is, in fact, going to be, as of now, the permanent chief of police of the Montgomery County Division of the Park Police. He has been with the commission since 1986, so he has a great deal of experience not only as an officer but as a member of the Park and Planning Police Force. He's a graduate of the Southern Police Institute at the University of Louisville. He has served as a captain and assistant chief and most recently as an acting chief. He is leading the Park Police through reaccreditation, the all-important CALEA process. I know he enjoys enormous respect in the community and from the officers and other staff at Park Police, as well as from everyone who works for the Park and Planning Commission. So it gives me tremendous pleasure to announce this selection. I hope you'll all give him a terrific round of applause.
Thank you, Mr. Balaj, and I want to say I appreciate the confidence that the board and Mr. Lohr showing me by promoting me to this position. I've been in acting since January, and when we had our retreat with the planning board back in December, you made it clear that the commission's mission was going to be customer-focused. I went back and informed my command staff that we're going to retool the way we do business to fall in line with the overall commission's mission. As such, what I intend to do, and you'll see here shortly, is we're going to look at the way we police and the way we interact with the community, and I think that you'll be proud of the way we've aligned ourselves with the overall mission. And I really do appreciate this appointment.
Well, that's great to hear. And, we've been talking in this county about community policing for a long time, and I think anyone who's paying attention knows that the Park Police have been at the forefront of community. I think we're doing community policing even before it had a name. So that's great to hear that you're continuing in that spirit. And Charlie, did you want to add anything?
I just wanted to make sure that the board was aware that the selection committee did interview a number of well-qualified candidates. So there was certainly no lack of interest in this position, but in the end, we decided that the best choice was someone from within, and we're very pleased to have Nat as our permanent chief.
Great. Thank you very much. Mary, did we want to do some photos? We're going to briefly interrupt the proceedings. Tell us who you want, and they'll come front and center.
Okay, Derek, Charlie, and Nat, if you'll step up a few feet, and somebody else has a camera over here also. Okay, Charlie, you can go to Jack and Clinton.
Congratulations.
Mr. Lohr, I think you have a director's report.
I think the only other thing I wanted to mention, the board, of course, is already aware of this, but the biggest event for us at the National Parks Conference last week was the fact that the commission received its certification from the Commission on Accreditation of Park and Recreation Agencies. We were very pleased that the report from the Accreditation Commission indicated that we were, I guess in many ways, the best agency they had reviewed. We were the only agency that has ever met all 155 standards that the Accreditation Commission reviews these agencies against. So we're very proud of that fact, and as I said yesterday at the full commission meeting, we did also, through this process, identify areas where, although we met the standard, we think we can certainly improve, and that's where we'll be focusing our efforts in the next couple years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's really great, to have met every single standard and be the first agency ever is pretty impressive. Go to the head of the class, so congratulations.
Yeah, we'll certainly have a more formal ceremony at a later point and probably do something at the council as well. Okay, we're going to now open up the project plan for the Silver Spring Gateway, and let me also let everyone in the room know that the Blockhouse Point Conservation Park Master Plan is on our agenda this morning, but I do not want to take it up until all the board members are present, and we're still missing Commissioner Bryant, so we may have to play around with the timing on that particular item, but we'll get to it when we know we have everybody available. Staff report.
Good morning.
On number one.
Good morning. My name is Winwood Hance with the Development Review Division. Today we bring before you a formal request for extension of the review period for the project plan. As you know, the project was to have been heard by the Planning Board several weeks ago. The applicant and staff needed a little more time to review the project, and so we come to you today having noticed the public that there was a reconsideration for this item today. I conclude my remarks. You have our recommendation to let it go for 6 months longer.
Applicant.
Good morning. Bob Dalrymple with Linnes and Blocker with Pete Jervy representing the applicant. This property is the subject of an approved project plan. We were amending the project plan to accommodate a major grocery tenant that we're hoping to bring to this area. We're asking for a little pause in the process to reevaluate a couple of things, and I guess three things in particular. One is the lease negotiations with the tenant are still ongoing. Number two, we've realized a pretty extensive increase in costs of construction materials and whatnot for complex structures in the last 6 to 9 months. So we're also taking a look at the economic viability of everything. We don't want to bring to you a project that can't be realized. And thirdly, there's been an expression of interest on the part of the parking district to locate some additional public parking spaces at this location and for us to include those into our project. And so we're in negotiations also with them as to how we can accommodate that and make it all fit into the SAC that we have to work with. So we're going to continue to work with your staff, and we hope to bring something back to you in the form of project plan and site plan approval for what's already a great project that has the potential here to be even greater. But, again, a pause in it to allow us to work with staff I think is in the best interest of everybody and is the best use of everybody's time.
Thank you. We have one speaker, Charlotte Walpuff. Come on up. Good morning. Have a seat and tell us what you'd like to tell us.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Charlotte Walpuff, and I am a landlord here in Silver Spring, and I'm here today to represent one of my tenants, Chris Fields Restaurant, that we all know and I think love and enjoy. It's been operated by the Landis family since 1945, and we've been their landlord since 1981. The Silver Spring Landmark has relied on public parking throughout its successful 59 years in business. Having reviewed the proposed gateway project, I question the availability of public parking or any parking at all for patrons of Chris Fields or any other small business in that area. No provision seems to have been made for public parking. Chris Fields is an old-fashioned business, and if you take away their access to public parking, they will probably be forced to close, and this would be a devastating loss, I think. In order to prevent this kind of loss, I am requesting that the gateway parking provisions be reviewed, since the building of the project will effectively eliminate all parking on Blair Mill Road. I ask that the project include public parking within its proposed parking garage. This is a solution that promotes good neighbors as well as the spirit of cooperation, and it is respectful of both the old and the new. And I thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dalrymple, would you like to respond to that?
As I indicated, one of the reasons we're asking for this pause is because the parking district has expressed an interest in locating some additional public parking spaces within this garage. So we hope to accommodate your concerns.
Lynn, can you add anything to this issue from the staff perspective?
No, but as we go through the review period, we will bring this forward with this last round.
All right, so this issue will be explored thoroughly. Certainly,
yes,
Chris
yes.
Fields is indeed a landmark, and we would not want to do anything that could endanger it.
Yeah, that's right. I just think it's important because as things get redeveloped, it's so easy sometimes for the old to get thrown out and everything become new, and it's the sort of genius of great development that incorporates the good elements and builds on that. So I'm sure it'll be worked out.
All right. Unless there's further discussion, we need a motion to approve an extension of the project plan review period.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. The staff recommendation is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
See you shortly on this.
Great. Number two, the Park CIP implementation report.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Mike Riley. I'm chief of the Park Development Division. I'm here this morning to update the Planning Board on the status of the development portion, implementation of the development portion of the CIP. This is an informational item, and no action is being requested this morning. With me is my team from Park Development, the managers that assist me in implementing the CIP. I'd like to introduce them briefly. Betty McCowan, our CIP coordinator. Doug Alexander, the manager of our project management section. Mitra Petawim, the manager of our construction section. Patricia McManus, the chief of our design section. And Bill Grease, as you all know, who does our land acquisition. The bottom line of my memo is that by some standards, our CIP implementation is pretty good. By others, there's room for improvement. If you ask the county right now, if you ask Glen Orlin, who does the implementation rates for the county, you would hear that our CIP implementation is pretty good. The method they use, though, only looks at certain funding sources, and it's more geared towards planning fiscal capacity for the budget than it really is measuring agencies' overall performance. So as you can see from my memo, I've outlined three different methods that look at implementation rate, that look at all our funding sources. I wanted to go over those very briefly. They're at the bottom of page one of your memo. The method A I outlined looks at the actual expenditure we had in FY 2004 over the current year expenditure, which was the expenditure in the adopted CIP during the year. That produces an implementation rate of 84%. Method B, which is really the method I prefer to really look at performance because it accounts for the money that you've placed under contract in addition to what you've spent. That's the method that past planning boards, particularly former Commissioner Holmes, used to emphasize that if you've put money under contract, that was a measure of your performance. That method produces implementation rate of 94%. And if you, the method C, which produces the least favorable implementation rate, is what you actually spent over the total expenditure that was shown in the adopted FY05-10 CIP, produces a number of 50%. And in the memo, I did outline some reasons why that method is a little bit flawed, because there are reasons, particularly regarding spending affordability, that at times you inflate your estimated current year expenditure in your proposed budget. There is also one other method we use to look at implementation, and that's what we call PDF by PDF method. That's shown in pages 11 and 12. That actually lets you see which projects we're on track on versus projects that are slipping behind. The table at the bottom of page 3 of your memo shows projections for fiscal year 2005 and 2006. What I'm showing is that in fiscal year 2005, we would meet two out of three of the targets that I show, and then by fiscal year 2006, we would meet or exceed all three of our targets for implementation rate. One asterisk I want to put to that, of course, is if we have major projects coming in those years through supplemental appropriation, something like what happened with the Soccerplex years ago, we'd, of course, have to revisit those numbers. I wanted to just go over a few of the initiatives that are described in the memo. We did have a major reorganization in the division this year. We formed three new sections called Design, Construction, and Project Management. They replaced some old sections that had evolved over the years that were basically doing the same type of work within the sections, and this new structure reorganizes more by function so that we can consolidate expertise in the sections. And as I introduced Doug, Mitra, and Patricia, they are the managers of those three new sections. Vacancies and past implementation reports. I cited vacancies as a major problem. I'm happy to announce that no longer is an issue. In park development, we're down to three funded vacancies, of which we've conducted interviews for two and hope to have be down to one vacancy by the end of the calendar year. We also, at past implementation reports, the board has asked for a different form of status reporting. And I wanted to briefly overview the reports on pages 13 and 16 of the memo, which are a new form you haven't seen before. We've got a Microsoft Access database in the division where we track everything we're doing, whether it's in the CIP or not in the CIP, and it tracks information such as budget, schedule, status, assignment of staff. And if you'll turn to the page 13, you'll see one of the reports that is geared to show the current schedule of the project against the originally approved schedule, so it can tell you at a glance whether we're on schedule or behind, and if we're behind, it would cite the reasons why. Just to go down the report very quickly, there's a description of the project at the top. The middle table describes major milestones of projects, such as project start, 50% complete, when the permits should be issued, and then it tracks three columns, which are the approved per the PDF, the projected, if we haven't got to the that point yet, and then the actual, if that milestone has actually already occurred. And then down at the bottom of the table, we have some text that describes the current status and major activities and then shows the staff contacts. So it's our intention to include these reports for major projects in all future implementation reports, and to ultimately make a version of this report available online so the public who's interested in the status of our projects would be able to find out what's going on online, as opposed to picking up the phone and calling. I did have a section in here on challenges for CIP implementation. I just wanted to touch base on a few of those. One of the things that I have to constantly monitor is assigning my staff to work, of course, that is not in the CIP. And there's several examples where that happens. It usually happens for good reason. One of the things that's prevalent lately is that we're fortunate to be getting a lot of our facilities built by developers through the subdivision process. Up in Clarksburg, there's at least 8 parks now in various stages of planning, design, and construction where developers are building parks or park facilities for us. And generally what happens in those cases is the park planning staff, people like Doug Powell, people in Jeff Science units work with the developers up to the point of the approval of the site plan or the preliminary plan. And then as the projects are designed and built, park development staff steps into a lead role to make sure that the facilities we get meet our standards. And that's a good thing, but of course that work is not measured through implementation of the CIP, but nonetheless we get a lot of our facilities that way. Another category is the engineering and architectural support to the operating divisions. An example would be earlier this year we had significant flooding in Long Branch and Sligo Creek Parkway. We lost 2 playgrounds. We also had damage to 2 bridges. When those things arise, the operating divisions do look to park development for support in the things they can't handle, particularly something like replacement of a bridge where they need some engineering and permitting. And then lastly, another good thing that's happening, but of course does require resources, is public-private partnerships. A lot of times as those originate and move to design and construction, I do put my staff on those projects. So they're good things, so they're going to continue to happen. I just have to carefully monitor my resource allocation between what the board and council supported in the CIP versus these other important initiatives. And lastly, just some highlights of accomplishments, what we achieved during the year. We did get approval of the new FY 2005-2010 CIP. I think that the good news there is there was no constraining of that program due to concerns over implementation. I think we got all but just a few of our priorities funded, and where they weren't funded, they were as early as we wanted, they were at least put out in the out years of the CIP. We completed the Black Hill Maintenance Yard, which was a project that had been around a long time, had been delayed in the past, but we finally opened that facility, which will help the northern region maintain the increasing number of parks up in the Up County. Playgrounds, we have good news. In the 2-year period between 2004 and 2005, we've already completed 20 playground renovations, and we have 15 under design or construction. So in that 2-year period, we will have completed 35 playground renovations, which was an issue in the past. We had a deferred maintenance problem with our playground renovations. We got Jessup Blair Park under construction, which was a major achievement. We got the water and septic systems operating at the Rickman Farm Horse Park, which was the key thing that had to be resolved to get the operator out there and operating. We received approval for the Rock Creek Pedestrian Bridge, one of our larger projects at almost $6 million that brought in a $2.5 million transportation enhancement grant, and also got approval of design and construction money for the Olney Skate Park, which leveraged a $350,000 bond bill. So in conclusion, I think fiscal year 2004 was a good year for CIP implementation. I don't believe we're exactly where we need to be. However, I think we went in the right direction. I think that we will be where we want to be in fiscal year 2006. And I just want to thank my staff here, particularly the people I introduced, for a lot of good hard work throughout the year.
Thank you very much, and I want to congratulate you personally, because when I was appointed chair a little over 2 years ago, I made the CIP implementation rate a high priority. I communicated that to you and others, and you clearly heard the message and have reacted, which I appreciate. Sure, we can do better. I know that you will strive to do so. Probably the most important thing, numbers aside, is that you and your staff are really focused now on this question. It is a very important question, and it is a very important objective for us for a variety of reasons. The most obvious is that the faster we can get services to the public, by definition, the better job we're doing of serving the public. But it's also critical because when the council hands out money, it has a tendency to hand out less to agencies that it thinks won't use the money quickly, and it has a tendency to hand out more to agencies that it feels confident will, in fact, use the money in the fiscal year for which it's granted. So we get a better slice of the budget pie by having a good implementation rate. And also it, you know, kind of sends a message about the rate is poor, and sort of suggests, well, you know, maybe there's some kind of systemic problem in park and planning in terms of getting things done. If it's better, that sends a message that, you know, we are a can-do agency. And so for all those reasons, it's very important. We won't let up our commitment at all, but I think things are moving in the right direction. I want to thank you personally for that, okay, Mike. You. Other comments?
My only comment is to express my appreciation for your hard work, but also to say that I think the charts you showed on pages 13, 14, and 15 are a very good idea, because in 94% of X or 95% of X or 92% of X, when X is a little variable depending on when you decide to write the checks or make the commitments, and then X is not, as you've pointed out, is more and more not always just the CIP funds that we get from council. So the actual project sheets that show are we, in a sense, meeting managerial goals in a very concrete form are an important innovation, and I think will bring home to the public in a much, and the council in a much more concrete fashion, that you're on top of the work and that we're getting it done.
Yeah, just to follow up, if we don't do it already, Charlie and Mike, we really ought to find some way to highlight in the CIP request all of the work that private developers are doing in terms of building new parks, not just to make the point that our staff gets diverted by that, but to make the point that as an agency, we're using our development powers to help, our regulatory powers to help increase the supply of park amenities at very little cost to the taxpayer. I mean, that's a real selling point that we should never let them not see.
Just a couple of things. I think that the form changes are helpful. I wonder if they might be further enhanced by some color. I have a recollection that when we went through this maybe 5 years ago, when Art was still on the board and Bill Hussman was here, we ended up with some formats. For example, if it's behind schedule, maybe the box is red. So that everybody can see it. Or if it's more than, I mean, maybe there's a threshold if it's more than a couple weeks behind schedule, but some way of highlighting when they're, okay, when they're problems. On the point that Chairman made about the, and you mentioned as well, use of resources on non-CIP projects, either the public-private partnerships or private development that's going to bring us resources. We've had conversations over the last few years, and I don't recall where we got to, on the notion that we should actually program that work. I mean, instead of just taking people away from other programs, that we ought to build it into the work program, that we ought to say, we know there will be work on developers' projects that where they're giving us stuff. We know there will be public-private partnerships. We don't know at the moment which of those there'll be, but we know there'll be them, and we want them in our work program. Are we doing that?
I think the challenge is that it's been increasing. It's been hard to quantify. Yes, I go into every year when we prepare our operating budget understanding there will be a certain level of support to the operating divisions. What I've been observing is I'm underestimating It seems like opportunity knocks every time I turn around of for example, we now have a grants manager. That's a good thing. We're going to go out and we're going to push for grants. So the question that maybe which should be brought to the board on occasion, if we get a grant, do we put that on top of our CIP program, or do we perhaps look at our CIP program and give something back? Kind of a radical concept, but the challenge I have is quantifying it.
Well, let me take one step back, though. Are we currently putting into the work program at least some of that? Maybe we're not getting it right, but we're assuming that X number of hours will be spent on these operations or capital projects.
Yes, I actually, in my operating budget, I have to actually project by each staff person the amount they will be paid out of the CIP versus the amount they will be paid out of the operating budget.
The distinction being that the operating budget has to fund the work done for private developers or
that's right,
or public-private partnerships.
And can that change?
It can certainly change. I mean, ultimately, if we knew that we were going to have 10% more private money coming in from some source, then we could go back to the council and say, give us another position because we know that this is going to be happening. I think we need a little bit better track record before we feel confident doing that. The other possibility is to do more with consultants, which is one of the things that Mike had in his report. I don't think you highlighted it, but it was on one of these pages about having on-call consultants who could help us when we get a particular grant or public-private partnership proposal that we weren't expecting, so that it doesn't come off of our staff. Now, that assumes that we get enough through the grant to cover all of the costs. So it's a complicated...
Well, I understand. I guess I'm what I want to be clear on is not too many years ago what I understood we would be told was if a public-private partnership comes in or if we're doing work on land that's going to be dedicated, the only way we do that is we have to take people away from other projects because we didn't none of that zeros in the work program. And so we just get people to work harder, but that's how it gets done. So zero in the work program. So I'm trying to find out whether we're still zero in the work program for that or whether we've got some in the work program for that and we're still just kind of playing around with what the right amount is.
I guess my philosophy has been that until I'm exactly where I want to be with CIP implementation, my preference would be to have everyone maximize on the CIP. But being a realist, I know that that's not happening. One of the reasons
the answer is we're doing some. We're doing some. We're just trying to figure out what the right amount is at this point. We actually went to the council in the last CIP and asked them for additional money in one of the PDFs to cover the cost of our work on public-private partnerships.
Right.
They gave us some of that money, but not all of it. Is that correct?
$50,000 or something.
Betty McCown. They gave us $20,000 in the facility planning non-local PDF. We had asked for $50,000, and they said that if we would come back and tell them how we spent the $20,000, that perhaps there could be more applied in the future. That's just for...
And have we done that?
Well, we have just gotten it this July, so we have to have a track record for this year. So that is for the upfront planning that would be involved with a public-private partnership once the board has approved that partnership being in place. The second place that money was placed was in the cost-sharing non-local PDF, where we have already had funding that we can use some of our funding there to support public-private partnerships when they get to the design and construction phase. So we're monitoring that for this year. Those would allow us to have expenditures that are already expected in the CIP.
Two questions. Can we only go back to them at the end of the year? If we use up the 20 by next month, we're not allowed to go back and say we've used it all up?
We could go back at any time and report how we were using it and that we wanted more money, of course.
Okay. In the... I guess I'd like to, not necessarily here, but urge some creative thinking on the parks that are that. I mean, I understand that the work that we put into parks that are going to come to us from somebody else as part of the development review process. And I just would ask the question whether it is possible to turn that into to get a PDF on that. To turn that into a capital project. We're not building as somebody else is building, but we're putting money into stuff that will be a capital improvement. And figure out how we might do that. Yes, it's complicated, but it seems to me we
could do that. And, in fact, as I was listening to the conversation, I made a note to consider that possibility.
Because I want to try and make, first of all, that reinforces the notion that this is real stuff that's coming to us, and that's actually useful, but more consistent planning and budgeting that allows us to do what we know we're going to be doing, and plan for that up front and get the money for it, whenever we can. Maybe you can't get it way in advance. I don't know. It requires a little work on figuring out how we get that.
Well, one of the reasons we focused on creating this database that tracks everything we're doing is to be able to quantify that workload, to be able to track each and every one of these non-CIP projects and be able to present a meaningful analysis of how much work it is, one work year, two work years.
And to the extent you can convert them into CIP projects, that might be a good thing.
Yeah, I can just follow up. I tend to agree. And we've talked about this, and part of the problem was the council didn't really cooperate with what we wanted to do. But, you know, if I had my druthers, we'd have a PDF for the developer-funded projects, maybe one PDF or maybe separate PDFs. And we also have a PDF for the public-private partnerships, which would list the public-private partnerships that we were embarked upon and contain the money to support those partnerships and then maybe some cushion for new opportunities that walk in the door. But the advantage of that, among others, would be, you know, we'd budget our public-private partnership involvement. And so if something great walked in the door and there was no money left to support it, we'd have to say, sorry, you know, it's great, but we can't do it this year, maybe next year.
Or we'll go to the council and see if they'll
add to it, yeah. And that, you know, would be... I guess the council's response to that was sort of, you know, well, okay, if that's what you want to do, then you need to reduce your money somewhere else, which we didn't really want to do.
Right, so that's the problem. Any money you put into a PDF, you have to be sure you're going to spend it. Otherwise, you're taking up capacity in the CIP that could be used for something else. Or, you know, I guess there's always a possibility of going back and doing an amendment at some point if it looks like you're not going to use it all. But that interrupts.
I mean, this is not something we can figure out here at the table, but we need to keep working on this because I think that would be more transparent. It would allow us to budget. It would. You were very diplomatic when you said, you know, opportunities keep knocking at the door. The reality is, you know, every great opportunity that comes in the door is an additional burden on staff. And they're very good about saying, you know, well, yeah, my inbox is like this, but I'll try to find a way. But we could all discipline ourselves better by having a budget.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Most of what I wanted to say has been said. First of all, there's been a huge improvement. Thank you, Mike. Secondly, I had written down here budget for projects outside the CIP. It's kind of like the house where you know you're going to have some repairs. You don't know what, but you've got to have that rainy day fund. So I know you've done this. Well, you just explained you've done some of that, but somehow we need to be more flexible. We need to have, either through the amendment or going back to the council, we need to do it in a way that we put it on the council's lap. Oh, okay, you tell them we're not going to do these projects. You don't want to do this public-private partnership, or you don't want to accept a donation? Okay, tell us that, and we won't do it. But I think we should be getting the information up to them more quickly so they see the dilemma that we are faced with. This report was really good, but you know how I am about these reports. Not just it's the traffic reports, the I guess I'm not a numbers person. And so, to me, this would be the first report, and then there would be a second report that was a little more simple and straightforward. Do we need to decide how we measure the implementation, whether we're going to use A, B, or C, or which one have we always used?
Well, my proposal would be to keep presenting all of them. We've used this method B with past boards because of the emphasis on recognizing encumbered money as an indicator of performance.
Okay. Well,
that troubles me because just if encumbered it's been encumbered and then it sits in a bank for 6 months because the contractor is not out doing the work, and so it's that just means you've encumbered it. It's not a measure of productivity in terms of what's actually happening on the ground.
Well, I was actually about to make some comments about that. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Perdue did, by mentioning the color coding of the oldest, talk about timeliness. And I'm sorry that Allison's not here because this is something that he's been interested in. For internal purposes, as an internal document, I would like to see the CIP projects listed by what are the oldest on down to see, you know, what are the ones that have been kicking around a really long time and what's wrong with them and why are they like that. So I would like to see that kind of a listing. Also, I'd like an internal document and then an external document. We have it's our business to get things in order, and then we present to the public the way things stand after we do our business. For tot lots, though, for example, in reading this, maybe I didn't know how to read it, but I couldn't find, you know, how I would understand that we were doing so well on tot lots and how we had, remember we had the issue that we had the amount of money that we hadn't been able to spend. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I would have known that we got that worked out, and I would like to be able to read something and understand that.
Okay.
Because that was an issue that's of concern to me, and it's also it's a personnel issue, because remember we only have the part-time person, Kathy Dierstein, designing the tot lots, and I think you talked about contracting out, but it seemed like either we needed a full-time person or we needed to contract out, or we needed to make some sort of change.
And we have made several changes. It was my intention to come back to the board with a brief informational item just on playgrounds, since that had been a focus.
Okay, well, then I don't want to burden us with that now, but I just would like a little more transparency and for internal purposes, the bad news, and then we can work through the bad news and make that even better news, which you have done.
Okay.
Don't see any more questions. Thank you very much. Good report. Item 3, a request by the Bethesda Chevy Chase Rotary Club to enter into a partnership to renovate the playground at Norwood Local Park.
Good morning. I'm still Mike Riley from the Park Development Division. With me is Trish McManus, the chief of our design section, and Pam Cudahy, who is the president of the Bethesda Chevy Chase Rotary Club.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm pleased to be here this morning to recommend that the planning board accept the generous offer from the Bethesda Chevy Chase Rotary to contribute to the renovation of the Norwood Local Park Playground. With new accessible play equipment. Rotary desires to make this contribution in hope of the celebration of the global eradication of polio in 2005, which is also Rotary Centennial Year. And, of course, I'll let Pam expound on that in a few moments. There's a memo in your packet from Pam and from Laura Rich of the Parks Foundation that outlines Rotary's intent for the donation. Very brief history on this project to date. In spring of this year, Rotary approached staff about this potential partnership. Staff met with Rotary in May to discuss the scope and feasibility of the project. We also discussed alternative locations, and then in June of this year, Rotary sent a letter to staff signaling their commitment to this partnership and donation. Norwood Local Park is a 17-acre park located at the terminus of Norwood Road. It's on the west side of Wisconsin Avenue, just south of Bradley Boulevard. It's a very active park, very highly developed. It has a baseball field, softball field, a playground, 5 tennis courts, a basketball court, a paddle tennis court, and a recreation building. Staff has met with Rotary twice since May to refine the scope of the project and prepare a preliminary design. The estimated cost is between $80,000 and $95,000. The supply and installation of the new equipment, which is estimated between $50,000 and $60,000, would be funded by Rotary. And then the site work, estimated between $30,000 and $35,000, would be funded through the park CIP. The timeline is to have this playground completed and opened in June 2005. Norwood Local Park is in our six-year CIP program for replacement, so this donation would allow us to use funds earmarked for Norwood for another playground. Staff recommends we accept Rotary's generous contribution and enter into a partnership for the renovation of the Norwood Local Park playground.
Good morning. I'm Pam Cudahy, president of the Bethesda Chevy Chase Rotary Club, and I'm pleased to be here this morning to discuss the potential of this project. Rotary has been dedicated to community service, international goodwill and peace, and high business ethics since its founding 100 years ago. And our club wanted to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Rotary International by finding a pressing community need that would also link to Rotary's flagship project, which has been Polio Plus, the eradication of polio in the world. And we've made great progress on Polio Plus, and it would give us great pleasure to continue to work with the county and the community in renovating this playground so it would be more accessible to children who have mobility problems.
Any we do have one speaker, Fraser Blaylock. Why don't we? Why don't you come on up? You can take a chair temporarily.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here simply as a member of the Chevy Chase West community, and I have a daughter in the Bethesda Chevy Chase Nursery School, which is on the grounds of Norwood Park, and I'm just here to indicate our interest in the project and our enthusiasm, and go on record as such. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, it is. It sounds like a wonderful project, and we certainly appreciate your organization's generosity. Let's see if there are questions.
Well, I think it's really terrific. I read all the materials, and you know, but I really want to ask Bill Mooney a question, and that's because I was reading the memo from the Parks Foundation. Sort of memorializing the goals and all. And one thing I would really like to discuss on the record is that as we receive these donations from communities that are blessed with a real bounty, how will we equalize things in terms of our total commitment to park renovation? If it's because there may be some areas where people can't raise funds.
Specifically with this project, what we have discussed internally, and I think was reflected in the memo, this enables us to take $60,000 that we would have spent, actually $90,000 would have been spent in 08 on this renovation. By moving it up, we spend $30,000 now. It frees up $60,000 in 08. Mike and his staff will select a park in a neighborhood that probably would not be able to raise this kind of funds. to add to their renovation schedule in the out years. This is one of the issues that has never really been resolved in terms of playground donations, and that is the equity issue. And this is one effort to this strategy is one way to look at this and say that when we get a donation in one neighborhood, we will take the funds from that. Now, what they get in exchange is this playground gets done sooner.
I understand that. It's a very simple solution. I think it makes all the sense in the world. I just wanted to discuss it on the record because I think it's important. I wanted the commitment that it is for a year certain. We're not talking about, you know, this money that might appear 10 years from now. And so it's a double benefit this way. You can feel like you're not only helping to renovate your own park, mm-hmm. but it will move up the renovation of another park. And another budget subject tonight, but we always need money for renovating these tot lots. So I just, Bill, wanted that to be brought out because it came from Parks Foundation. I wanted to hear it from you. So thank you.
I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a very important, important point.
So do we need a motion or?
Yes, we need to indicate our approval of the partnership as proposed by staff.
I move approval and also including our discussion just now.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? By unanimous vote of those present, we enthusiastically endorse this partnership.
Congratulations,
and thank you very much. We look forward to helping to cut the ribbon.
Yes.
Well, we've come to number four, Blockhouse Point, and we're still missing a commissioner. Anyone have an ETA for Commissioner Bryant? He said, late morning, it's 11:20. How late can it get?
It's late.
So if he's not around the corner, I think we're going to have to push it off to the afternoon. Which I hate to do, because we have a lot of people here for this.
Yeah. Well, whatever you think best.
Or I can just put it on at 1:30.
He really doesn't get here.
They say he'll be here. I would put it on at 1:30.
Yeah, careful.
We have two community drivers.